There's a handoff. They go the other way. Look at him. Doug Plank hits him, but you pay when you hit the Earl. This time Campbell's a little slow getting up.
Darn right he's hurt.
WGN, let's bring in number 46, former Chicago Bear. It is Doug Plank. You watching football today?
Hey, I think everybody in America is watching football. No one can be reached by phone.
I can't believe that the Vikings just won. Wow.
You know, especially with the history of New Orleans and the Saints and all the things that have happened down there over the last few years.
Right.
I mean, it was incredible. I mean, just the way the game unfolded, and you had to think as it was transpiring that this was going to come down to something late in the game. You know, I didn't really realize in overtime, you know, early in the second half, but as it started unfolding, I just started feeling, wow, this is going to be either a great ending or a horrific ending for the Saints. And unfortunately for them, the Vikings came down, and whatever you can say about Cousins and, you know, his lack of big play ability, he just stood in that pocket and made an incredible throw.
We have four monitors in the studio. We have the game on one of them, and I watch it out of the corner of my eye. It looked like the Vikings were kind of in control most of the game, and it seemed like the Saints were playing catch-up. Am I right on that?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's you know, they were able to at least stay, you know, points ahead, either 3 or 7, and I think... But, you know, anybody that's ever played in that stadium, Pete, it's unbelievable. It's so loud, and you can't really even put your thoughts together as far as what your responsibilities and assignments are, just because it's so incredibly loud.
Right.
And, you know, and then, of course, the Saints. I mean, who could say that the Saints weren't on a roll? I mean, these last few games, they were playing almost outside whatever they had done before. I mean, in terms of their success, their energy, their enthusiasm, and but again, everybody remembers last year what happened to them in the playoff game, which they had to have. And I'm not saying this was similar. They tried to make it a controversial call in the end zone when the Vikings scored at the end, but tremendous game by Cousins.
You know what? We made our picks on Friday. It was me, Hamp, and Dave Ennett. And I took the Bills over the Texans, and I took the Saints at home, and I took the Patriots. So let me see here. I am 0-3.
Hey, Pete, listen, on my little circles,
yeah.
I did exactly the same thing.
Okay.
I chose every one of those teams from evidence and material based on what took place during the year. And the other thing that I think you can't not look at is how is the team playing right now or the last game they had?
Right.
Did they barely win it? Were they dominating? Did they have momentum? And in all those cases, I would have to say that the loser the last couple days had all the momentum going into that game. And, you know, whether it was home or away, you just thought, okay, those three teams are going to win. But, you know, they didn't. And so I guess you have to just give credit to the National Football League that what do they say on any Sunday or Monday or Saturday, whatever.
Right. When you played for the Bears, did you go to the playoffs? I know you had Neil Armstrong as a coach and Ditka. When did you go?
Well, we did. We hadn't been to the playoff for a long time in a 77 season. We won the last game of the year by a 35-point point differential in beating the Cardinals. You know, we went – that was the – well, that was a game that we had to have. But anyway, we ended up playing in Dallas and losing. And, you know, we went down there – in fact, we didn't get down there at all. We stayed and practiced in Chicago, outside, cold weather, icy fields. I don't know how anybody thought we were going to be prepared for a playoff game. I mean, it was really our season. We were treating that game like it was our Super Bowl because we knew we weren't going to go anywhere after that game. And then later in my career, we did beat the Cardinals last game of the year earlier in the year and go and play the Giants. And
I remember that. Yes.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was the Eagles. It was the Eagles, and I think in 1980. And remember, there was Walter Payton really just was having an incredible year that year. But there was one play where they flag Brian Bashnagel, our wide receiver, for going upfield before the ball was snapped. And, you know, it was such a controversial call. But, you know, in those games, Pete, when something like that happens and there's a change of, you know, possession and one team gets the ball, and especially if they're at home, it's incredible obstacle to have to overcome it. And we didn't get it done. So those were the two opportunities.
Right.
That's why I was cheering on the sidelines in 85 for their success in just, you know, just devastating people through the playoff picture. You know, it wasn't one of those things you had to watch for the fourth quarter. No, you knew
right
by halftime this game was over.
I mean, you were a player. You coached a championship team in the Arena Football League. But you just know when a team is going to go all the way. I mean, you just kind of feel it. You feel the chemistry. And you just know that this is your year, don't you?
I think you only have to look at anybody that's been around, you know, has looked at the NFL for the last couple of years. And, you know, just a few years ago when the Patriots had that great run and won the Super Bowl, hit that big comeback, you know, when you're watching that game, you're watching spectacular plays take place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they ran for ran that fake pass over top of his head, you know, down there at the goal line, you know, great catches. The catch by Edelman, you know, where he bobbled it three or four times and he managed to get his hand underneath it just a few, you know, inches before it hit the ground. Things like that start happening, and you start thinking, okay, this team is probably going to win this game.
Right.
And, you know, but I don't know. You know, watching this game here, I had to believe that really I thought the Saints had momentum. You know, they had a great opportunity. You know, they were running the ball very successfully. I mean, they were just tearing up Viking defenders. And for it to end that way, I mean, it's like you, you know, snatched victory out of the jaws of defeat.
Drew Brees is what, 40, 41 years old?
I think so.
So
yeah.
How many years does he have left? Because he looks like he's 32 on the field.
I agree. You know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, it seems like a lot of older players, they seem like they get disconnected the later they play. In other words, they're not is energetic, they're not enthusiastic, they're
right.
not, you know, mingling with, that's not the case with Drew Brees. He, amazing. I mean, you watch him, he is so engaged and such a leadership. I mean, I think as good as he is on the field, I think his leadership ability is really what carried the day.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And he brought, he, you know, he made everybody around him better. And I think he's still doing that. It's just that, you know, you can go back and say, well, why did you let the Vikings score? I mean, Pete, when you go back and look at that last catch, someone could not have done that had they walked over to the receiver and stood beside him and just dropped the ball mm-hmm. in his hands.
Right.
I mean, that's how good that pass was.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, and in fact, I don't even know, he only partially saw the receiver down the field because, you know, he was so well covered on the play, the ball just literally, it was a perfect throw.
We're talking with Doug Plank, former Chicago Bear, good old number 46, 815 area code. We get text messages throughout the show in the studio, Doug. You lost to Dallas in 77. You lost to Philadelphia in 79.
Yeah. I'm going to plead CTE on this. I just wasn't expecting to get. Let me just say this. Everyone was a disaster, so I just stopped remembering them. You don't like to remember disasters in your life.
Well, here's my question. Well, here's my question for you as a player and a fierce competitor. When you're going into the playoff, what is your mindset knowing that there's no way that you're going to beat the Cowboys in the 70s, which Roger Staubach?
I don't know. I might be my mistake. It just seemed to me like we kept running on the field, running. Well, you know why? Because we were turning the ball over. We were fumbling it. We had interceptions.
Yep.
I believe we had a minimum of 3 interceptions. I want to say 5.
But,
you know, it's so much fun to play defense when that happens, Pete. Oh, my gosh. You get a chance to go back out on the field every series. You come off thinking, okay, I'm going to break. No, you're
right.
Going to go back out
oh,
there.
Oh, that's painful.
And you're going to have to do more tackling and more pass protection.
Oh, boy.
It was just, we just walked off there saying, what happened? And you know, once again, though, trying to practice under the conditions back in Chicago. And you said you're in the playoffs, but if you don't have anywhere you can practice and you're out there slipping and sliding,
yeah,
and you're getting on that plane to go down to Dallas, you're going, oh yeah, okay, we got a really, really good chance to win this one.
why did they think that was a good idea?
Oh,
I don't understand it.
It was not a good idea. And,
no.
You know, then there was some rumors, and nobody really made any mention of it, but, you know, the word was out that our head coach was leaving to go to Washington Redskins, Jack Pardee. So, you know, that's having a great relationship. It's like going to the prom with your girlfriend, and you find out once you get to the prom, she's actually going to go hook up with somebody else at the prom.
Right.
That's the way it was with everyone. There were a few players on the team knew that Jack Pardee was already signed with the Washington Redskins, and he was going to go there.
Yep.
And it's the bottom falls out. You're just like,
I'm
really?
Sure.
Now, I wonder who our new coach is going to be. and it just all those other things. And then you're going down to Dallas. You know, and back in Dallas, you know, they had one really strong weapon, the Dallas Cowboys, their cheerleaders. And they would put them directly behind the visitor's bench, and they were shaking and baking the whole game. Pete, it was hard to watch the game.
You're kidding.
When you're walking off the field, you watched all these pom-poms going on.
Of course.
You're going, man, I like the view a lot better this direction than watching us play against the Cowboys.
Was Avellini your quarterback in 77?
Yes, he was.
And who was in 79? Was it Avellini or Vince Evans? Who was 79? I mean, if you can't remember, we'll look it up.
Yeah, we had, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, Bob Avellini was still our quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, we had Mike Stips was on the team. Mike played some.
Oh, yeah.
And certainly Vince Evans was there, you know, through some of those 70s years.
Right.
That's terrible to even say that, but, you know, in terms of not knowing who the players were, I worried about the guys next to me. I knew Gary Stensic was next to me in the huddle.
Sure.
That's the only thing I cared about.
Right. I get it. The offense and defense. You know, when I was talking to Hamp on Friday, it came out that, I don't know how it came up in conversation, but he said, you know, I liked most of the people that I played with. Some guys didn't like so much. I mean, was there people that you just couldn't stand or players you couldn't stand that you played with back in the 70s? I'm sure.
There were a few. I mean, I never voiced my opinion or concern because I think that was very unprofessional, and I always try to just encourage players as much and try to encourage myself. I mean, this, you know, I was doing my own little self-motivational seminar out there every game, just trying to cheer myself up.
Yeah.
And so, but you know what? When you watch players, I'm sorry, and fans can do the same thing. They can evaluate players and say, that guy's not giving 100%. You can see it. It's very easy to do. You know, when I was a coach, that was the biggest trait that I would try to make a change on any player was the first thing, not that he didn't have talent or ability, it was his effort. And if he didn't have the effort, then, you know, we just couldn't afford to have him on the team. And making mental mistakes, I should say that too. No effort and mental mistakes, that's a good, quick way to get yourself released in the National Football League. And, you know, especially, I can understand that a little bit if your unit is just destroying everybody. You know, you're stopping everyone or you're scoring points every single time you score. Okay, but we were never in that circumstance other than the 85 defense.
Yep.
The rest of the time, I mean, our defense, you know, we scored, I can't remember exactly each year where we were in scoring, but we were always near the bottom, 10%, in even with Walter Payton. And so, yes, you get frustrated because when you're on a team, you can't tell who's giving 100% and who is not giving 100%.
That would drive me crazy, I know. I mean, people that, you know, in their jobs, they can tell that someone's dogging it. It's going to upset them. I can't imagine being on a football team. But, Doug, I'm going to have you hold on a second. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you about the Bears season. We haven't really talked about that. We haven't really recapped the season.
Not much.
And we'll do a quick look at the playoff picture now that the Patriots are out and the Saints are out and who you're going to pick to go to the Super Bowl. Doug Plank on the phone with us. Good old number 46. More with him next on 720 WGN. 720 WGN on the phone with us. Good old number 46, former Chicago Bear, Doug Plank. We're talking NFL. We're talking Bears. By the way, I met you a few years ago, and I love the fact that we're friends because I grew up watching you play football. I'm a huge fan of yours, but once I got to know you as a person, I love you even more.
Well, thank you.
You're like, what is this guy talking about? But I just want to tell people, we talk off the air. Like yesterday, I was shopping at Jewel at Wellington and Ashland, and you and I had a 30-minute conversation about football. I just love it. I do. It's great.
Well, you know what? It changes all the time, and I do think the NFL is certainly in a process right now in terms of, you know, how the game is played, the rules, mm-hmm. you know, what is a catch, what is targeting.
Yep.
You know, just on and on and on. I mean, I just see these things that are taking place, and it's so minuscule in terms of the difference between what they thought happened and what did happen. And, you know, it just makes it a bit more difficult. And again, being a defensive player, Pete, you know, the one that just concerns me is that whole targeting issue.
Right, because that's how you played. That's how you played. You led with your head.
Yeah, it was a target. You know, but, you know, even though, you know, if you're trying to say keep your head down and out of the way of the running back, what happens, though, and this happened in the case of Walter Payton a lot, Walter, before engaging a defender, would duck his head at the last second.
Yeah.
And so you could think you were in perfect position under today's standards in terms of making a tackle, and then all of a sudden the offensive player drops his head on top of your helmet. And now, you know, how do you describe that? What, mm-hmm. it's helmet to helmet. That's a penalty. And in most situations right now, the defense is going to be penalized.
Right. Well, you went to Ohio State. In Ohio State, that happened to their defensive back. I can't remember his name, but he got thrown out of the game.
Sure did.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure did. I mean, it's devastating. You see a player next to you, you know, get ejected.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, mentally, it just starts affecting you. Like, well, I better really watch what I do.
Right.
You know, I better make sure I take my head and put it somewhere where nobody can find it.
Well,
when I'm making the tackle.
We have about 6 minutes. I want to talk about the Bears and then the NFL picture. What did you think of the Bears this season? Very disappointing, but give me your thoughts, because Matt Nagy was your quarterback when you were coaching in the Arena Football League.
Yeah, he sure was. You know what? And I don't want to make it simplified, but I think all you have to do is take a look at who they played this past season versus who they played, you know, his inaugural season.
Yep.
And you can see that the competitors were much better. And you could say, well, that doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter, because when you play against better teams, it's not just they're incrementally better. Sometimes they're a lot better. And, you know, when you go up against those week after week after week, and, you know, it takes something from you. When you want to play against a really superior foe, physically and mentally, I tell you, you're exhausted. I mean, when you play against the best, you know, it's not the same as, you know, playing as a team that's, you know, coming in the bowels of the division.
Right.
No, it matters.
It's, yep.
Some of those teams, you have to put more time and effort, even in during the week, in terms of your schemes and the checkdowns and all those sort of things. So that's what I'm saying. I just think the Bears ran headfirst into a schedule which was much more difficult than the first year. And I think they scrambled and struggled just to try to make it happen. Some of the things I didn't understand, I thought they tried to run way too many times into the short side of the field.
Yep.
You know, when you put the ball in the field, sometimes it might be in the middle, but most times it's on one side or the other. And I just believe, you know, trying to take advantage of the defense on the wide side of the field because you have more room to operate.
Well, and that makes sense. If I know that, shouldn't Matt Nagy know that? You don't use the short side of the field if you're running, because everyone's going to collapse on you.
But, you know, once again, I think the majority of those plays were not called by Matt. I think those were sent in.
Oh.
And I just think to do it over and over again, I just think, you know, it's like a lot of coaches, too. If they have success in one play or another, they'll continue to run that play over and over and over.
Yep.
Well, sooner or later, the defense figures it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially if you're throwing the ball, they'll just take a chance. You'll line up in that formation again, in that down and distance, and you know what? They're not even reading. They're just jumping. They're taking a chance. And a lot of times, you know, they get turnovers.
Doug, give me the top two things that you would change if you were in the front office or the head coach of the Chicago Bears.
Well, I think they have to establish a running game, number one.
Yep.
And the other thing is, I think instead of dink and dunk passes, which a lot of teams are guilty of.
Yep.
I think you have to be able to throw the ball down the field. And you have to get receivers that can catch the ball down the field. I think that's, you know, look at the Patriots right now. Someone says, well, they're not the same Patriots. I know. They can't run the ball and pick up first downs,
mm-hmm.
and they're not threatening down the field. They're throwing very short passes. And now, you can do it, but, you know, you have to do it 20 times to get down the field. You know, if you have someone like a Randy Moss, a deep receiver
yep.
that can match up very well against the corner, wow, that defense is scared. I mean, they're way, way back because they're fearful that that ball is going to get thrown over their head. And I just saw a lack of a running game, which really hurt them on converting first downs. And I don't think they had a deep threat.
Doug, who are you taking in the Super Bowl this year?
Wow, that's a good one. How can you not look at the Ravens for what they've done this year?
They're so good.
You know, they've been magical.
Yep.
I mean, they've just done some incredible things. Boy, you know what? And looking at the NFC, there's just so many teams that I think are really just, you know, a play away from each other in terms of,
a lot of people are counting Green Bay out, and the fact that they had a bye week and they get to rest their veterans and Aaron Rodgers just kind of sit back and wait for either Seattle or the Eagles. I really feel like you got to be careful with the Packers. I think the Packers move on. They play the 49ers in the championship, and that's going to be a close game.
It's very hard to not take Aaron Rodgers. I just worry about their defense. And I know that they had some stats,
yeah.
but, you know, some of those teams they were playing against in some of the games that they won, it was because of Aaron Rodgers. It wasn't because of their defense.
Yep.
And, I think in the Eagles, I saw the Eagles a couple weeks ago against the Giants. And although they did win that game, I don't say pretty handily, but, you know, they were gashed a couple times by Barkley, too. Ran way through the defense.
Yeah.
And I think the Eagles are like one of those, hey, we all stuck together and we made it work. We were better for it. We're all going to pull for each other. That's their team. You know, in other words, they have no egos on that team. You know, everybody is trying to pull for each other. Love their coach.
Yep.
Very enthusiastic. But you got to think, you know, you're going to be going up against a Chiefs or a Ravens type of offense. And, wow, that's like nothing I've seen, and that looks like nothing else anybody else has seen for a while.
You're right.
You have a quarterback that is that good, that runs and passes, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. They have other things that they can do off that action,
right?
Which are really, really neat. I mean, it just puts a lot of pressure on the defense. So, I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, I don't want to go against that guy because I've just seen him do too many great things.
I know, it drives me crazy. It does.
I think it would be a high-scoring game, but I think the Packers probably have the best chance out of what's left in the NFC. And I love the Seahawks. I mean, I think they have a great – you know, they have a whole bunch of stumbles, too.
I know.
Just when you think you really love the Seahawks, they play a game, you're stunned. Like, how did they lose that game? And that's been pretty much their year. They're not consistent like they were in years past.
Right. Doug, you're the best, man. Happy New Year, and hopefully we'll get together very, very soon, okay?
Thank you, Pete. Oh, I promise, I get the talent, you'll be the first guy to call.
I love it. Thank you, Doug. Talk soon.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks.
Is Doug Plank, good old number 46 from your Chicago Bears. Coming up next hour, we are going to check the weather for this week. We'll talk to Mike Jansen from the Weather Center at WGN-TV. And Lucas Giolito is going to join us, Sox pitcher, at 4:30. He's got a great backstory. His family is in the entertainment world. I didn't realize that. And his mother, actress. I think his brother is an actor, too, in Hollywood. So Lucas Giolito will join us at 4:30. But first, it's time for news. Let's check in with WGN-TV's Mike Jansen. How are you, brother?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
you were doing the morning show last week, right?
I'm doing the morning show, yeah. I'm here, there, and everywhere. I'll be doing a lot of the morning show over the next several weeks. We're going to take a little time off. I'm going to bring a little one into this world. So, it's not always nice when you can spend time with a newborn.
Mm-hmm. I was doing the morning show, and we have you on in the studio, of course. And I'm like, there's my buddy Mike. I got to have him on Sunday. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Yeah, it's been a little while. But you know what has not changed much is the weather. I mean, we continue to be warmer than average.
This is wonderful. It makes you think, okay, could I live in Florida or California and not have to deal with winters anymore?
Well, you know, winter can.
And
last
I forgot that my mother
April.
Lives in Peoria, and my family's all here. And I think to myself, that's never going to happen.
Yeah. Unless you win the lottery, then you can just take everybody with you.
Right, go back and forth.
Yeah.
I like this weather. I know people are missing the snow. I don't know who those people are, but I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends. I mean, for those that like to take the kids out and find the local spot and go sledding, and I'm sure that the folks that are up there closer to the Illinois-Wisconsin state line that would like to get some skiers out there, they're having to run the machines a lot more than they would hope. But when you look at the fact that we have had so far, between December and January, at O'Hare, 2.5 inches of snow. In October, we had just over 4.5 inches, and we had over 3.5 inches in November. So we had more snow easily in the last 2 months of what would you call meteorological fall than what we have seen so far here in meteorological winter. Now, that being said, we are in January, and it only takes one storm, and next thing you know, you're up to your knees in snowfall.
I forgot about Halloween. Remember how bad it was on Halloween here?
Oh, I remember it because in our neighborhood, we didn't even attempt to do any trick-or-treating, and they didn't cancel it. They didn't postpone it. We just said, you know what, we're going to go to local shopping mall. They were handing out treats over there, mm-hmm. the businesses were, and so we just did that. And it was a whole lot easier dealing with that situation than trying to trump through the snow and you know, princesses and all that kind of stuff, they just don't look the same when they've got the big coat and the snow boots on.
Yeah, we had I want to say we had 2 trick-or-treaters that night. That was it. And I worked. I had to be at work at 10 o'clock. So, you know, I did it. I did the trick-or-treating. And there was only 2 that showed up.
We took, my daughter had a friend of hers who lives a few doors down. We took both of them over to the shopping mall. They got maybe 20 pieces of candy, if that much, over there. But we came back to the house, and because we didn't have any trick-or-treaters, we took half the bucket that we had for anybody to stop by, poured half it in the friend's bucket, and put the other half in my daughter's bucket, and went, there you go. You've got a full bucket now. You've got enough sugar here to last you to at least March.
Yes. So are we going to have a mild winter? Are we okay with that, or is there any way to predict that?
So far it's mild.
Yeah.
And I've seen nothing so far that is going to lead me to say, oh, well, we're going to make this big turnaround. What has been consistently showing up is this lean towards warmer than average temperatures, wetter than average possibly, but the wet weather would be in the form of rain and not snow. While you get out west, they're looking at the below average temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I talk to my family who lives in Scottsdale, and the differences between our afternoon highs and their afternoon highs is only maybe 5 or 10 degrees, they're not real happy. I'm okay with it.
I am too.
I have no issues with it, but I also know that, you know, we can't, we look back at October, we had that snow on Halloween, and what we did when you start digging historically through the numbers is finding that when you had a big snow like that early in the year, that you wound up with a season that didn't have all that much snow.
Great news.
But again, it's kind of one of those things of, okay, we didn't have much snow. Say we end up with the end of the year of maybe only 30 inches of snow, but you end up with 20 inches of that in one system. It's kind of like when I lived on the Gulf Coast. What's the difference between a good hurricane season and a bad hurricane season? If there's 20 storms and none of them mm-hmm. make landfall, okay, big deal.
That's great.
But if there's one and it was a Cat 5 and it hit a major metropolitan area, that's the difference there. So, so far, so good. I mean, right now I looked over the next 7 days, and as you get to Thursday, which looks like it could be a wet day around here, looking for a high in the upper 40s, And that's not snow. I mean, that you're looking at rain there. We could see a little bit of accumulating snow here Friday into Saturday, but it doesn't look big at this point. And it's funny because the system just a couple of days ago, it overperformed in terms of dropping, you know, over 4 inches of snow down in LaSalle County. Then he got into the city, and it was not, you know, it was a dusting. And
yeah,
that was
we had next to nothing. Do you believe in the Farmer's Almanac?
I don't. There is no science. They used absolutely no science, really, to base their predictions. But it's funny, you have the individuals, is that old joke, you know, how can you be, you know, a weatherman's only job you can have where you're wrong 50% of the time,
right,
and all that kind of stuff. But those are the same kind of individuals that will reach for the Farmer's Almanac. It's like, okay, I see where you're, you know. No, I don't understand that.
Where do they get their information, and why do they publish it every single year?
I've been trying to figure that one out, too, but you know what? They still sell it. I mean, that's...
People buy it.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
They do. And I don't know if things will start to change as, you know, the generations. I really believe that, like, my mom's generation is maybe the last one that's going to buy into it. I don't really look at the people that I grew up in saying, yeah, they're going to go buy that Farmer's Almanac. I just don't buy it, especially since everything that seems like so many of the things that they want to pick up and look at, and, you know, as we get younger and younger, they just want to grab their phone and use an app.
Yeah, it's so funny because I have three different weather apps. I watch WGN TV. I mean, we have all this information right in front of our face. Why would you buy a book that was published in July?
I don't get it. I couldn't tell you. And the thing is, if you talk to actual farmers, they have things that they go to that are paid services. Some are free services that they go and look at things that are completely different than just their local weather people. They go and look at completely different things. So, there, like you said, there's apps and everything that are at our fingertips. Now, the one thing that you always have to keep in mind is there are a lot of people that have found information similar to what, you know, I have at my fingertips online, but they know how to decipher it when they're looking at it.
Sure.
You know, that's the difference there is you can look at a lot of things. Oh, well, it's going to do this. Well, not necessarily. Did you also look at this element, that element? So it's a lot of, you know, it's very interesting. I will put it to you that way. I also know, you know, one of the things that so far, like you said, you like it. What we've been seeing here as of late.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've made the comment, been able to make it a couple of times in the last couple of weeks, actually, that, hey, you know what? It may have been warmer today than it more likely will be on, especially for the Cubs home opener, Wrigley Field. You know, that sometimes turns into the coldest place on earth.
Oh, of course.
And so, you know, we could have a 50-degree day in January and then turn around and be 28 and sleeting or snowing for the Cubs home opener because they keep wanting to. For whatever reason, I don't know. I don't think the Sox and the Cubs, neither one of them, should play a game at home until the third week of April. Give us a chance, you know?
We're talking with Mike Jansen from WGN TV. Last year I was so angry because we got cheated out of everything, including, I want to say, June was very cold, wasn't it? I don't feel like it got really warm until the 1st of July.
Yeah, it was one of those where the wet weather and the clouds, we actually tied a record for having the cloudiest
year. Oh, that's right. We had no sun. That's right.
Yeah. And so that's what drags it to the most, doesn't it? I mean, that's the thing is here today. I mean, we've warmed into the 40s. Hey, that's great. We're about 10 degrees warmer than average. We've had some sun, but not a ton. But it's all kind of ruined by the winds, which we often find that in January. Things start to get breezy around here. But yeah, that's one of the things that I think gets me the most is even if the temperatures are warm, the fact that you don't see any sunshine, the sunshine makes all the difference in the world.
Right.
If it wants to be 5 degrees cooler than average in June, fine. Give me the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
I can deal with that. It just perks you up a little bit.
It's a mental state when you see that sun.
It is. There's no doubt about that. And that's the way we've been going so far. I mean, we've been pretty gloomy as of late as well. But, you know, you have to remember in May, the last 2 years, we go back to 2018, we set a record for the most rainfall at O'Hare in the month of May.
We
turned around and broke that a year later with both years, over 8 inches of rainfall in both of those Mays. And actually earlier, it would have been about June, I think, I went down to Kankakee County, southwestern Kankakee County, where I grew up, and it just happened to be an area in the region that saw so much rain. Those folks down there, a tenth of an inch of rain, you'd have thought it rained 2 inches because there was so much water everywhere, and the sun just never wanted to come out.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
And when it finally did, you know, people didn't know what to do with themselves. The farmers, they hadn't planted anything. They went, okay, well, I guess we'll wait till next year. So hopefully this year will not be the same thing, but boy, it seems seems like in the last decade, our springs, there have been a lot of very wet springs.
And you know what? I've talked about this on the radio, and Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, excuse me, Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It, has a lawn guy, Joe Polina, and I talk to Joe every year, and it's like, we got to get our fertilizer down. You got to get grass seed down before May hits because it'll rain like crazy. And come June, your lawn's going to look full and fantastic.
Yeah, it'll look full and fantastic as long as the sun finally does come out. You know, yes. And that's the thing too is you do all this work and then the sun doesn't come out and nothing grows because it's just sitting there and it almost wants to become mold more than it does anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can turn that around. There's no way of looking ahead that far and saying, oh man, you know, the spring maybe looked good. But when's the last time you heard somebody go, oh, you know, this is kind of a typical spring? I mean, what is typical? I mean, there's a reason why we get to the average, why we have averages.
Right.
It's because it's one way, one year, it's the opposite the next, and somewhere in between is the
averages. There's never a spring in Chicago. It goes from winter to summer.
Then next thing you know, and if you're lucky, we may stretch summer out just a little bit into, say, September, October, and then all of a sudden... it goes downhill, and you look at November, you know, going back to the farmers, for instance, they were starting to get stuff out of the fields,
mm-hmm.
But then it started to rain, and then we had a hard freeze, and so it's like a snap of the fingers. You went from, oh, and things are okay, this is typical, to, boy, does this stink. What is going on here? We're already in the winter. I don't want to deal with this. But, you know, that's what airlines are for. And that's the way I look at it. If you got an opportunity, you got to
get away.
But I tell you what, Pete, I guarantee you have some people that are listening right now that are upset because we haven't had snow, that we haven't had cold. They like it. They live here and they want to see some snow, and I get it. I think if there was a way for it to snow, say, 6 inches, make a nice, pretty white blanket that people can go play on, but yet it didn't land on the roads or the sidewalks where we had to clear it off, I think everybody'd be real excited about that.
My wife's from Wausau, Wisconsin, so we go up to Granite Peak every year, and we go skiing multiple times a year. And I don't even know what the snow situation is up there. Has it been snowing? I'm sure they have snow. It's northern Wisconsin, but
there has been more snow up in that direction, quite a bit. You know, and that's the thing is most of those the systems that have missed us have gone through up there. You had some occasions like Lauren Majera, who does weekend sports for us, and we were talking about this on Saturday. She last week had to go to a wedding up in Wisconsin. She said, oh, sure enough, you know, basically running into a blizzard up there as you got to northern Wisconsin. But it's been missing us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just flat out just up and over us.
Are you a skier? Do you ski?
I did years and years ago. It's been more than 20 years now.
Let's get you up to Granite Peak. We'll go together,
They
do it right up there. I love it.
I used to love doing it, but then you get to a certain age and time, it's like, you know what? I probably would just hurt myself. we had a lot of fun when I was in high school and college of doing that kind of thing.
I love
it. It was fun. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. We went to the UP the one year and spent 3 days up there skiing, just a bunch of high school kids that we had our fun. I'll just put it to you that way.
Okay.
And so, you know.
Good.
Yeah. I've done my thing.
All right. Give me the forecast for this week. Is it still going to be mild? I know that you mentioned that we're going to see rain on Thursday.
Yeah, we're quiet. I mean, we got a high of around 40 tomorrow. We'll get some more clouds in the afternoon. We'll start the day with plenty of sunshine, it looks like.
Okay.
Maybe some flurries, stray snow shower can't be ruled out on a breezy Tuesday. But here's the thing. I mean, temperature's still in the upper 30s, looks like, in the afternoon. On Wednesday is going to be the chilliest day, basically a seasonable January day. But whenever we get these seasonable days around here, everybody's just, you know, they're thinking it's a 15 below because it's been so much above average. And then we're flirting with 50 by Thursday with that good chance for rain. We may see a little rain or snow here, looks like, on Friday, especially in the evening hour. So I think Friday night into Saturday, that's when we have that time period of not only seeing some rain, maybe get some accumulating snowfall. Looked at one of our forecast models that would take you all the way out in that time period. Maybe we get an inch or two around here, but that's so far away.
Right. I mean,
things are going to change between now and then.
Yeah.
But I've only, overall, I've got one day, which is Wednesday, where it looks like we are going to see around average temperatures. Everything else, warmer than average.
Fantastic.
And I was just looking the 6 to 10 day and the 8 to 14 day outlooks while I was sitting here with you. And both of them saying, I mean, this is taking you all the way out until the 19th of January, leaning toward warmer than average temperatures, but wetter than average. But again, if we're warmer than average, that wetter than average would be in the form of rainfall, not necessarily snow.
Okay.
And meanwhile, you know, call your friends that live out in California and Nevada and places like that, and they're going to find colder than average temperatures. I mean, we are going to be on the warm side. So you get, if nothing else, you're getting a break from the heating bill. I mean, let's remember the polar vortex where it seemed like the furnace never shut off.
Yeah, it never ends. By the way, what's it like working at WGN-TV? Does Skilling have a text message to all the meteorologists at GN and send information out?
He emails on the days that he is on the air, Monday through Friday. Okay. He emails his forecast and you know, especially in the afternoons, like Demetrius at 4 o'clock. If anybody else is working at 4 o'clock,
right.
We use Tom's forecast, and we all try to stay in touch with each other to kind of get an idea of what we feel is going to happen. There are some gentlemen that also work in this office. They don't even they spend on the weekends their time at home. But they have all the information at their fingertips, and they'll make some things for our website, for the Tribune paper, and it's kind of a collaborative thing. You know, bounce some ideas back and forth. Well, you know, we see this. It looks better today than it did yesterday. More likely of one thing or the other. And so, yeah, it's a team effort. But, you know, there's the point of the spear, and that's Tom. And so, hey, look, the guy has been here
since
I was two.
Right. He is a legend in Chicago.
Yeah. He's a legend in a lot of places.
Right.
I mean, he is probably the most well-known meteorologist in the world. I mean, he's everywhere. He's Tom. So if he says do this, I say okay. And then you just go about doing it.
Right. And the fact that he's such a likable person.
Yeah, doesn't that stink, too?
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than a good guy who's good at his job, I tell you what.
That's great stuff.
But that's the nice thing, though. I mean, everybody that works in this office, a good group of people. You know, from Paul Conrad to Demetrius Ivory.
Well, Paul's a little crazy. I know Paul very well.
Paul may be crazy, but he's still a good guy. I mean, and that's, that's the fun part with him.
Mm-hmm.
He and I sometimes will go golfing together and stuff like that. But
can he golf?
Yeah, he golfs.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, how's his game?
I don't know. I think he's probably better than I am, but that's not saying much. you know, for he and I going golfing, it's not like we're going to shoot in the low 70s or something like that. It's more about just going out there on a decent day and
right.
Just riding around and if you score well, great. If you don't,
it's just getting out.
It's better than being stuck in the office. Yeah,
you're right, man. So when can we see you on WGN-TV this week?
I will be on in about, let's see, 36 minutes.
Okay.
And then I'll be back on at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And then coming up this week from 4 to 6 a.m., Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then next weekend starting at 5 o'clock and 9 o'clock again.
4 to 6 a.m.?
Yeah.
So what time is wake up? 2 a.m.?
1:30 thereabouts.
1:30.
Yeah, I usually like to be on the road a little bit after 2, so I'm in here by about 2:30. That gives me an hour and a half to...
That's crazy. So you're doing third shift, basically.
Yeah, and it's great when it's the complete opposite of what I'm doing here on the weekends.
So you go home, take a quick nap, and then go straight to work, or you don't work Monday morning?
Well, yeah, I don't work Mondays and Tuesdays. There's just no way you could do that turn.
Oh, I would have made you work.
You probably would, but then
you wouldn't get anything
out of me because nobody would be able to understand what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that point, you're better off just not even go home. Just stay here.
Yeah.
You know, if you're off the air at 10 o'clock and back on, 6 hours later,
mm-hmm.
Might as well not even go home. Just
run over to the Olive Garden, have a nice little meal across the street.
Sure.
Yeah, that's nice.
Sleep, you know, lay across the weather desk and take a nap for a few hours and then just use the forecast you'd used the night before, hoping that nothing had changed overnight.
By the way, you mentioned earlier that people say that forecasters or meteorologists... 50% wrong most of the time, or 50% wrong, 50% right.
Yeah.
How about a Major League Baseball player? They fail when they go up to bat seven out of eight times.
Yeah.
So they fail seven out of eight times, and people still love the Major League players.
And if you are successful
mm-hmm.
30% of the time, three out of every 10 at-bats, and you do that for an entire career, there's a chance you're going to, there's a good
Hall
chance you're
going to
the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Right. You're a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
So you can fail 7 out of 10 times in Major League Baseball and make the Hall of Fame. But if you do that on TV, saying the weather, you're in trouble.
Yeah. If I went on today and said it was going to be 83 degrees tomorrow and, you know, 70 the rest of the week, obviously I'd be quite a ways off.
Right.
Or maybe if I only got two of the days out of the seven, with even, you know, close, I think they'd want to have a talk with me about that. Because, you know, a big swing and a miss on the baseball field, no big deal. But if I do it,
Yeah. And by the way, just to recap, it's going to be a mild spring and a very warm summer.
Okay. I'm all for that. I don't know if that's what's going to happen.
It would be nice. Yeah. There was one St. Patrick's Day I remember in the last 5 years that it was very, very warm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had, in the last few years, we've also had some Easters that were warm, and we've had some that have been very cold.
Right.
We've had some Easters where it snowed, and everybody, it's amazing, though, sometimes we will get that cold snap in April, and then all of a sudden, it just flips right back over, and you've got some decent weather that shows up. So.
Right, and we all forget about it because we have a nice summer and we can go outside, and then we forget and we're like, oh, we love Chicago again.
This you basically awesome. Just keep everything toward the front of your closet. That's all you can do. I mean, you may have a light sweatshirt on one day and then the parka and an extra layer the next. I mean, that's just the way it works around here.
Got it. Mike, great to catch up, man. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
All right, Pete, have a good one.
All right, that is Mike Jansen from WGN-TV. You can check him out tonight at 5 o'clock. All right, quick break, and we will talk to Lucas Giolito from the Chicago White Sox next on 720 WGN. How many days until pitchers and catchers report to spring training? Well, let's find out. We'll bring in number 27 from the Chicago White Sox. It's Lucas Giolito. How are you, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
How many days until you report?
It's coming up. I think that our spring training report date's like around Valentine's Day, but I think a good amount of us are going to get there early. We're pretty excited.
I mean, you got to be excited. All the things that are happening in the off season, coming off last season. I mean, this is going to be big. High expectations for the White Sox.
Yeah, and very much welcomed. You know, I think that over the last couple of years, the core group that we've kind of put together, we're starting to get closer. We're starting to make the right kind of strides, build that consistency. You know, the only thing that's been missing is the winning. And I think that with the additions that we have now, you know, the guys that we've gotten over the course of this offseason, that's going to put us in a really good position to kind of shift into that winning mentality.
And what did you do in the offseason? Did you travel? Are you still working out? What are you doing?
Yeah, a lot of working out, a lot of preparation for the next year. Did get to take a short vacation to celebrate me and my wife's one-year wedding anniversary. We went to Maui. That was a blast.
Wow.
Yeah.
How great is Hawaii? I went there on my honeymoon. I haven't been back in 18 years. I need to...
Oh, it's my favorite. It's my favorite. Yeah, we went to... I don't think you can beat Hawaii, man. And it was my first time to Maui. We like drove all around, explored the island, had a lot of fun.
Right. Did you get a convertible? That's what we did on our honeymoon.
No, we actually got a Jeep Wrangler because we drive on this highway along the north side and the east side of the island, and we were like pulling off the side of the road and hiking and finding waterfalls and all sorts of cool things like that. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, we had a blast.
Did you take the helicopter tour, you know, where they take you around the island and show you the Jurassic Park waterfall?
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but we didn't end up doing the helicopter. We drove around. We did a lot of snorkeling and scuba stuff as well, so we definitely got our money's worth.
You know what? I have horrible memories from that helicopter ride because the guy next to me was puking the entire time.
Like,
really?
Yeah.
I'm on my honeymoon. I just want to see the waterfall from Jurassic Park, and you're throwing up next to me.
that's definitely not ideal.
Oh, gosh. It's just rough stuff. We're talking with Lucas Giolito from the Chicago White Sox. So what do you think about... the acquisitions in the offseason. What do you think about Keuchel? What do you think about everything else? We got Gio for a year.
Yeah, I mean, up and down, it's been fantastic. As a player, I can't help decide these types of things. I just kind of sit and watch. You know, I'm on Twitter just like the fans, like seeing what's going to happen.
Really?
Yeah, you started off with acquiring Yasmani Grandal. I think that probably makes it so we probably have the best, if not one of the best, if not the best, catching duo in the big leagues,
right,
between him and McCann now.
Yeah.
You know, I love throwing to McCann. We have a great relationship, and now I'm looking forward to building another type of relationship like that with another elite catcher. And then, man, you got the pitching additions, Gio and Keuchel. I know Gio from my time with the Nationals, and he's a great,
right,
player, competitor, wonderful teammate. I think that he's going to be great as far as bringing the team together, you know, helping out with, you know, the off-field stuff, maybe,
sure,
you know, team dinners, things like that. We're going to have a lot of fun. And then more recently with Dallas Keuchel, I don't know him personally yet, but one of my good Braves, they were teammates last year. And
so
I heard nothing but wonderful things about Dallas through my friend Max. You know, any guy that's won a World Series ring, that's won a Cy Young Award,
mm-hmm,
that's the type of guy you want on your team. He knows what it takes to win. He knows what it takes to be consistent, be consistently great. So I'm looking forward to learning from him and having him in the rotation. So
I can hear the excitement. I can hear the excitement in your voice, and you being excited gets us excited about it.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. You know, last year was you know, another step forward personally for me, a step forward for our team. And I think that now we can really get over that hump and start to move into what we've been envisioning for our squad.
I'm going to ask you about this past year in a second, but Dallas Keuchel, when he was, we signed him, we were looking at all of his stats, and he was a fashion major in college. Did you know that?
I think I did read that somewhere in the last couple of weeks, yeah.
will you ask him for some, you know, some tips on how to dress, how to go out, things like that?
Yeah, probably. I'm probably going to have to make a little bit more money to keep up with that, too. But yeah, I'm into certain things. I'm not, like, the most fashionable guy, but I'm into sneakers and stuff like that. So I'm sure we'll have some good conversations when it comes to that.
Okay, tell me what happened between 2018 and 2019, because 2018 you had a challenging year. Last year made the All-Star team. What happened? What did you do? And are you doing it again?
Yeah. So the good thing is that I don't have to go into the offseason and completely overhaul everything like I did after 18.
Okay.
The baseline's there, so now it's more just trying to do as much as I can to build consistency in the good areas and eliminate whatever little bad habits are still lingering around. But yeah, I mean, from the 18 season, 19 season, essentially, I'd say the biggest change was mental. Despite all the physical things that I did, shortening my arm action and cleaning up my lower half mechanics, I'd say the biggest shift was mental, just being more comfortable. And going into the season, going into every single start with a higher level of self-confidence that I didn't allow that to waver. I didn't allow it to decrease based on performance or based on results.
Mm-hmm.
I was just focused on the process. I kind of convince myself, like, I know I'm going to be successful if I stay on track with what I need to focus on, and that's my work, that's the adjustments I need to make and the work I need to put in to maintain those. So
control the
that
things
was pretty much the biggest thing.
Control the things you can control. Did that come from you, or did that come from your pitching coach Don Cooper, or did you both figure it out, or how did that happen?
Yeah, a lot of conversations with Coop. Man, it's tough. I'm very fortunate that I'm surrounded by so many people that have believed in me and want to see me be successful. I've taken help from pretty much anywhere I can get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it starts with the coaching staff. Obviously, you mentioned Coop, working with Kurt Hassler as well, our bullpen coach. And then, you know, teammates I've had over the years, friends, even my wife, Ariana, just kind of listening, taking all the good I can, and then kind of putting it into my own program. I'd say last offseason, I really started to develop a real routine, something that I can rely on, something I can go back to. You know, this day I'm doing this, this day I'm doing this. This is, you know, focused work to make myself improve as a player. And so now that I have that, the work is even more fun because, you know, I'm not going and doing anything crazy. I don't have to go and focus on, you know, changing this, changing that. I have that baseline now. So now I just keep working and focus on, you know, just the little areas I can improve.
Sure. We're talking to Lucas Giolito from the Chicago White Sox. Athletes in general are superstitious, more so for major league players. Are you a superstitious guy?
Not really. I wouldn't. I think I was more when I was younger, and as I've gotten older, and I realize that if I just have a good routine I can rely on, I don't have to worry about all that other stuff.
So, if you're, let's say you won six games in a row, are you still wearing that same undershirt, or it doesn't matter to you?
No, that stuff doesn't matter to me too much. Okay. I sweat so much when I play that I'm like constantly changing my clothes throughout a game anyways.
Right.
but, yeah, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, like, I had to eat French toast the day I would start. Like, it was like, if I didn't, then I wasn't comfortable. Now, I don't really think about those things.
And what is it with your high school? I mean, I feel like famous people keep coming out of your high school. What is it? It's Harvard-Westlake, right?
Yeah, Harvard-Westlake High School in Studio City.
How many major league players came out of there? You're one of them.
Yeah, currently we have, Max Fried, Jack Flaherty. And then in the past, I think there's been, two, three, four others.
Wow. And your family, you have a great story. How come you didn't go into acting and you went into baseball?
Well, first of all, I think I'm a little too tall to be an actor. 6'6", opposite, like, if my love interest is like 5'3", that wouldn't look very good.
No, that doesn't work.
So that's one knock. The other side, I mean, honestly, is because it just never really appealed to me. Like, I didn't have like a passion for it. I'd watch my mother and what she was doing. Mm-hmm. It never really appealed to me. I wanted to go outside and play, whether that was baseball or basketball or just going outside and playing tag with friends. Like, that's what was more interesting, was going outside and playing. And other than that, it was video games. That's what my dad did for a living. So the acting, I never really caught that acting bug. My little brother did, though.
Yep.
He's about to finish up acting school.
So your mother was on which soap opera was it?
As the World Turns.
As the World Turns. Now, what is your brother? What has he been in, or is he just a struggling actor trying to make it?
No, he just he's finishing up. He's going the like classical training route. He wants to do it right. So, when he finished up high school, he went into a 3-year. It's like classical acting training program. It's at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama in Cardiff, Wales.
Wow.
I believe that Michael Sheen went there.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good actor.
Oh,
and I believe that Anthony Hopkins went there.
Anthony,
he's a legend.
Hopkins.
So
rings a bell. Didn't he just play the Pope?
Yeah, he did.
He did. Yeah.
Hannibal Lecter.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, my brother, he's in his final semester there, and then it's a 3-year program, and then he'll probably move to New York, start doing plays, things like that. I don't know, though. He might go down to London, work there, maybe go to L.A. That's all his decision, so we'll see what happens.
You two support each other? Because growing up, I have 7 brothers, and all we did was fist fight.
Oh, wow.
I was in a fist fight, Lucas, for 18 years. I mean, I'm sure you got in fights with your brother all the time.
Yeah, we have a little bit, 5-year age difference, so My dad would have killed me if I did anything too crazy.
Gotcha.
We even though we've kind of, now that we're in like our professional careers, I guess you could say we're in completely different realms.
Well, you've matured, right? You mature.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Even we support each other. He loves coming out to Chicago. He's been out to Chicago the last couple of years to watch me play.
Oh, nice.
And then, you know, when he's eventually a movie star, I can't wait to go to red carpet shows with him.
And you standing near him on the red carpet, I mean, you'll stand out like a sore thumb.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
What did you think of your former team, the Nationals, winning the World Series?
It was awesome. It was awesome. I was very happy for him. You know, I'm still friends with a lot of guys on that team.
I'm sure.
So I mean, I got some friends that are about to get World Series rings. It is, it's pretty cool, man. I'm hoping that we can get there sooner rather than later, with the White Sox.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was definitely rooting for him.
And Ricky Renteria, I have to ask you about him. I've never heard one bad thing about this guy. What's it like playing for him?
He's awesome. He's been maintaining a very consistent message to us for the last, however many years. It's been a pleasure to play for him, and I'm looking forward to playing for him when we start to achieve what we've been working towards.
Nice.
He's a great man, great manager. Like you said, nothing but wonderful things to say about Ricky.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. Are you working out tomorrow? What do we have going on? You benching? You maxing out on Mondays?
Yeah, no bench press for me. I'm a pitcher. That would just mess me up. But,
that's good. That was a test. That was a test, and you passed.
Yeah, there you
All
go.
Right, good. Nice.
There you go. Yeah, no, I'm. I got my workout. Got throwing. Starting to ramp throwing up a little bit. Starting to extend it out. Probably going to get off a mound and start doing some light bullpen work, probably around mid-January, and we'll get it ready for the season.
I love it. Lucas Giolito, thanks for coming on, man. You sound like a great guy, and we can't wait to have you on again during the season.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. Have a great Sunday. That's Lucas Giolito, everybody. Good old number 27 from the White Sox. What a nice guy. All right, quick break and more coming up next at 720 WGN. Boy, thanks again to Lucas Giolito. What a great guy. The fact that he is so excited about this team and the season gets everybody else excited. Man, that is awesome. Roger, in the news center, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing fantastic.
I mean, those are the guys that you want to root for. Guys like the Lucas Giolitos, and just I love that. And the White Sox, they're hungry, man.
Well, I know you're a little younger than me, and so you remember the days of the late 50s, early 60s White Sox. Maybe. Not.
I mean,
you know of them.
That's why we have Google.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, but my dad, who I think secretly was a Sox fan, even though we grew up on the North Side.
Okay.
Those were the games I went to with him and the family, because it was usually company outings.
Okay.
And then I would go to Ladies' Day with my mom to Wrigley Field. So I enjoyed both sides of the city for baseball. But the White Sox back then, they were magical.
Really?
Just loved watching them play.
Nellie Fox, Billy Pierce, early win.
Oh.
Yeah, just pulled it up here.
Yeah. Some great teams, not
sure
great as in, league winning World Series teams necessarily.
Minnie Minoso.
Yes.
Wow.
And I'm
good old number 34.
I am so blessed that I was actually, I was working downtown at City Hall many years ago, and he was signing autographs over at the State of Illinois building.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you stop in and tell him the story?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
good. I stopped in, and not only did I tell him the story of watching him play, but his son went to Evanston High School.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and at the time that I was going to school there. And so we weren't friends. We knew of each other. We kind of went in the same kind of circles. But so when I came up and I said, oh, yeah, I remember your son from school, and we started to talk. So I stayed in line a little longer than probably normal.
I think they appreciate that.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
I had the opportunity to kind of get to know Moose Scourin years ago.
Great player.
Does he have a million stories.
I could imagine.
You know, remember, he played with the Yankees back in 61, and when it was Moose, Maris, and the other M.
Mantle.
Mantle, thank you. Good old number seven, Mickey Mantle, who could have been the greatest baseball player of all time if he didn't drink and stay out all night.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have been the greatest baseball player ever.
He was worshipped.
But
seriously,
he loved going out, and he loved drinking and staying out all night.
Yeah,
man, and that's why, of course, you know, he had to have the surgery late in his life and the whole deal. But Moose was a great guy, just the best.
Those old days of baseball,
you
didn't have specialists. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
You didn't have the specialist.
Right.
You had pitchers that would go 12 innings. I mean, seriously, and come back 3 days later, 2 days later, maybe pitch relief the next day. Seriously.
I understand that.
You know,
times have changed
though.
They pitch a lot harder nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine throwing a 95 mile an hour fastball?
Well, yeah.
Have you ever tried to hit one of those?
I can't even hit a two-mile-an-hour
fastball.
What's
the fastest pitch? Because I've done that. I did the fantasy baseball at Wrigley Field years ago.
Okay.
And I want to say maybe a 50-mile-an-hour pitch. I don't think so. Maybe it was 45.
Well, who was pitching? One of the other people on the team? On the league?
Yes.
Fantasy league?
Well,
they
brought in pitchers like Fergie was pitching, but he wasn't pitching that hard. Rainbow Trout. Remember Rainbow Trout?
Yeah.
Absolutely insane. He brushed me back a few times. But those guys, I mean, just throwing light, they're throwing 50, 60, 70 miles an hour.
By the time our bodies react at our age, or my age, thank you, it's like five pitches have gone by before you said, all right, I'm ready. Seriously, I can't. I've been in the batting cages when I was a lot younger, and I could not hit the fastballs.
Oh, it's all about
timing. I'm great in softball. 16-inch. Oh, I can kill it. I got a home run record, I think, in our park.
Because you can see the ball.
I know.
Yeah, so you can walk into it. I love the guys that walk into
it.
All right, I'm going to hit this one. It's like,
they stand about 5 feet behind the catcher, and they walk all the way up and smack it a mile and a half.
But Lucas Giolito, he's already in his routine right now, knowing that they're going to report around February 14th.
Yeah, it's coming up already.
Think about the Russell brothers. Remember Rick Russell and his brother, how big they were?
Very tall.
But those guys were so overweight. What kind of training did they do in the offseason besides eat spaghetti?
Well, we're going back to an earlier time where all of this weight training and off-season training, and because you got to understand, back then, players weren't getting the kind of money they're getting now in the majors.
Yeah.
You know, and so a lot of them had to do other jobs in the off-season.
Yeah.
So
you're right.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. I mean, with all of professional sports, because they would have a different job in the offseason. They didn't make enough money.
Yeah, definitely. I know, I mean, not a sport necessarily, but teachers, a lot of them work all during the summer. And I'm not at school for summer school.
Oh, yeah.
They have full-time jobs. Mm-hmm. They're repair people. They're construction workers.
Yep.
Yeah, it's...
Johnny Lattner, who won the Heisman Trophy at the University of Notre Dame in 1953, got drafted by the Steelers, played for the Steelers for 1 year, and he's like, I can't support my family on this. I got to get a real job.
Wow.
So he quit. He was like, no, this is going to work. He had, I don't know, the Lattners, how many kids? Six, eight? Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that. Like, I thought he played more than a season.
He played a season or two, and it wasn't enough money, so he quit and got a real job.
Oh, that is the
honest to God truth.
See, and that's what happened. A lot of younger people nowadays don't have that history, that knowledge of what it used to be like as far as pay for professional sports. So,
back to the White Sox.
Yeah,
all the
great season. I can't not wait.
I'm telling you, Lucas Giolito, what a great guy. And he gave us his phone number on the way out, too.
Oh, really?
Ashley, you wrote down that cell phone number?
That's fantastic.
Okay, she's shaking her head.
I love when
are you
going
to share it with me? you were pretty chatty off the air talking to him. You talked to him for about 5 minutes, and I'm like, we're going on the air. We got to get going here. Yeah.
We're pals.
Mm-hmm.
BFFs.
They're buds now.
Yeah.
That's nice. All right, quick break, and we'll check news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, top of the hour. By the way, we're going to talk to Dr. Folks. He's an eye doctor. Have you guys seen this app that says if you practice 20 minutes a day, it's going to improve your eyesight? Has anybody seen this?
No.
It's all over. It keeps popping up, maybe because I've looked at it once, and it keeps popping up with me. But is that true? Can you?
I hope so. I have trifocals.
Can you exercise your eyes and actually make your eyes better with this app? We'll talk to Dr. Folks right after 5 o'clock. All right, it's 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios taking this up until 6 o'clock, the Blackhawks pregame. I am here. Roger's in the newsroom. We have Ashley behind the glass. We had Lucas Giolito from the White Sox on last hour, 219 area code. Hey, Pete, Lucas Giolito's mom, Lindsay Frost, replaced Meg Ryan on As the World Turns 35 years ago. Wow.
That's like rubbing elbows.
Wow.
Seriously.
Man. 708 area code. My son and I were at Burley's perfect game. We met Moose. We were talking about Moose Scourin, how great of a guy he was, and had a million stories. We met Moose under the stands before the game, and he told my teen son to put his hat on right. Patrick did. I love it. That is great. That is awesome. Our next guest, I love this guy, and I love telling the story how we first met. On the phone with us is ophthalmologist Dr. Richard Folks. How are you, brother?
Good, very good.
I like telling people how we met. We met in the bathroom at the Hancock building. What floor were we on? Was it 35? I can't remember.
That's the 15th. 15th floor, sir. That's the former home.
Yes.
The former home of an amazing rock and roll channel that used to be in Chicago.
Yes.
Where you used to work.
Yes. And I'd have to run in the hallway to go to the bathroom, and we ran into each other one day, and I started asking questions about eyes and why, as you get older, you have to wear reading glasses. And I was at a dinner last night with a guy that turned 50, and they were passing around one pair of reading glasses, and I didn't need them because I had the surgery from you.
Yes, excellent.
Yes, how about that? But the reason,
who wants to be passing around glasses, that's for sure.
Right. And the reason that I wanted to have you on today is because this app keeps coming up. You know when you look at something and then it just keeps popping up everywhere? It's an app called Glasses Off. And I wanted to talk to you about this because it's 12-minute sessions three times a week for 3 months, it says, and it will improve your vision. Is there a way that this actually works?
Great question. And, this kind of idea has been around for a long time. This is a slightly new spin on it. This is a company from Israel. And they're using a well-known technique using a kind of what's known as contrast sensitivity disc called the Gabor disc. So the Gabor disc is imagine you've got some lines.
Yep.
And the lines, the difference between the blackness or the grayness of those lines becomes more, less and less distinct until you can't see them anymore. And we use this to look at people's ability to do contrast sensitivity. And it's been a kind of a test we've used. So imagine using that as a way that you could perhaps train yourself to detect very fine differences between shades of gray. And that's really what this thing does. It's basically giving you a way that you could perhaps train your brain to do this. Now, it's not going to help your the clarity of your vision. But it's going to help your ability to detect what you see.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the trick. It's kind of a brain trick. Now, here's an interesting feature of vision. You know, we're born with certain vision, and we walk around in life, and you know, we may be squinting away when we're 5 or, you know, 7 or 11, and eventually your mom or dad maybe notices this, and they take you in to see the optometrist or the ophthalmologist, and they put some glasses on you, and it's like, OMG, there are leaves on trees, there are birds in this world. It's like, my God, look at this, you know?
Right.
A lot of us have had that experience, and so what happened there was, of course, you were doing just fine walking around with a bit of blur, but at some point, you got the glasses, and now from then on, you understood what it was like to see really clearly. And so that's really the key to all this, because, you know, you could probably tell me that you know, when you were having trouble with the mirror, but you were still able to make it work before I did that surgery. Even without the glasses, you kind of strain, or you could, you know, turn up the light or hold it away from your face far enough where you could still make out what was there. People make the font bigger on their phones.
Oh yeah,
right?
That's a, oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Or you put it in bold. That's how you're reading things. But
yeah,
I knew it was
bold
a little weird.
Black on white, right?
Right.
The more the blacker against the white, and the brighter it is, the better you're going to see.
Well, right? The last time we had you in studio, and you said this, it's a known fact as you get older, your eyesight gets worse because, what did you say? It's your, the muscles aren't as strong as they used to be, right?
Yeah. And so here's what's going on. You're born with these amazing lens cells that light's been passes through your pupil,
uh-huh.
Through the cornea, that's the front window of your eye, through the pupil, through this lens, and then all of that's going to bend, and then bend a little bit more, and you'll get that image on the retina back there, or not. And if it doesn't land on the retina, then it's out of focus. And so if the person, to bring that image into focus, you do have some muscle power in your eye to bend that lens behind your pupil. So you can squeeze that muscle, and what will happen is the back of that lens bends backwards into your eye, and that will create magnification. So you can get your image back up onto the retina so you can see it. And that's what we've been doing, you know, since we're children.
Right.
Children have a huge amount of ability to do this. They can give 5 or 6 diopters of power. That means they can really pull things in, you know. And now there are certain children that are born that their eyes are kind of short, and no matter how hard they try, they can't get it up onto the retina. So what happens is their eyes turn. And so if you see a child with some pretty strong-looking magnifiers on, mm-hmm. that child's eyes are a little too short, and no matter how hard they're straining to see, they can't get the image up onto the retina. So what happens is the muscles, you know, when you go to read, you want to turn your eyes in
right.
to look at something close. Well, those muscles take over, and your child suddenly has crossed eyes. They've got an eye that's turning in, you know. So we fix that with a magnifier. Well, so this is what happens to you when you get to be about 40. The lens cells are aging. They're building up waste product.
Yep.
And the lens, effectively, it's getting stiff. So that muscle's still working as good as it ever did. And you can strengthen that thing up all you want with $30 a month, app.
Yep.
And it's not going to really overcome that fundamental problem. Now, what you can do, and that's what this, and I don't want to put down this thing. I mean, I think it's a clever idea that you can, and I probably use this to some degree.
Yeah, but it's not gonna reverse it. That's the thing.
No, you cannot reverse it. No. But what you could do is you could learn, perhaps, to, you know, have your ability to see what you're missing better. You know, in other words, you could pick out in the blur, you can make out what it is.
Yeah. Well,
so do you want to do that? Well, you could. But it's certainly not really going to effectively get rid of the fundamental problem, which is the lens is stiffening.
Right.
We're working on that. As I was mentioning our last visit, there's the leading cause of blindness on the planet is cataracts. And the earliest phase of cataract is the lens stiffening in your eye. That is waste product building up in the lens.
And you told us that process starts. Yes, that process starts in early 40s. I want to bring in Roger, who does news here. Roger, what kind of glasses do you wear?
I wear trifocals now.
Trifocals.
But I went
trifocals. Where did you go?
I'm triply blind.
Seriously, you know? Go ahead.
When I was very young, I had what was called a lazy eye.
Okay.
Yep.
So so the eye just kind of starts drifting away. And I was told to take a pencil, hold it in my nose, and pull it out. And those were my exercises. Move the pencil in and out and make my eye focus on it. I don't know if it did any good because as I grew older, I could not read for long periods of time. I would literally fall asleep. I could read for maybe 15 minutes, and then I would get headaches, I would get tired, mm-hmm. I'd fall asleep. It wasn't until much later in life, I think I was probably late 20s, where I was finally, they put the drops in, and the ophthalmologist, I believe, said, wow, you really can't see anything, can you? And so that's when I started with glasses.
That's encouraging.
Did I not have good doctors before that?
How old were you when you started wearing glasses?
In late 20s.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
No. And they progressed to this fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And I still I still kind of fall asleep when I read. It's doesn't matter how large or small the letters
age,
are.
Raj, it's,
well, that too.
Yeah, it's
I'm
age.
A lot older now than 28. Thank you. But should I have done something different earlier on that could have helped me instead of those pencil exercises?
Yeah, well, so you're basically that child I was describing earlier, that your eyes are a little bit shorter than average. And because of that, you've been using your muscle power, which you had a lot of when you were younger, to bring the image up onto the retina. And so your presbyopic period, that period, you know, when your lens was beginning to age, occurred much earlier in life, because even a little bit is occurring when we're 30, but we have so much excess power that we overcome it. But you actually had used up your excess power because your eye was short. Your eye had to strain harder than average people did. And he discovered this, or she discovered this, when they gave you these drops, which relaxed that muscle. They paralyzed that muscle.
Ah,
so when you were in the clinic that day, they paralyzed that muscle, and now you were you walked out of that clinic blind, right?
Right.
They gave you those drops.
I needed help. They said you better bring someone to drive you home. Yeah.
Exactly. Because he took all that muscle power away that you had, and now you couldn't see anything. And that's when they, of course, discovered that you had, you know, four or five doctors of need for prescription. Now, it did take the strain off your eyes to start wearing those glasses. Correct.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, for the most part, until a number of years later, then I went to the bifocals, and I started noticing I was getting tired again when I was reading. And so I've been in and out, and the prescription changes minusculely each time, like it goes back and forward in power, back in power, but very small percentage.
Are you sure there's a correlation between reading and falling asleep? Maybe it's just boring material.
No, I was reading your life story, Pete, and it was very interesting. And I still don't understand why I was falling asleep.
Let me ask the doctor. Dr. Folks, is there a correlation?
It's amazing.
Is there a correlation between that? Because would it make him tired because if he's straining by reading?
Yes, there's no question.
Really?
Lots of things happen to people from eye strain. There's no question about it.
Okay.
Headaches are common. People describe headaches. And I will say, as far as exercise goes, that the consensus would be that as we get older, and even when you're younger, one thing you certainly can do is take a break from staring up close all the time and look out far away. You know, you're up there in the sky. Studio there, and you can look out, and you need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
If you do this, it does relax the eye for a bit, and I think if there is an exercise that is perhaps helpful, you know, just giving your eye that little break is definitely a plus, and I do recommend that. But outside of that, this relatively expensive program, I think it's mostly just going to train your brain to be able to see through the blur a little better.
Got it.
Which is not a bad thing, but I will tell you, we will fail most of the time, partially because they're asking you to spend quite a long period of time. You know, this is a 12 or 15 minute exercise three times a week. Well, you're not going to do it. You're going to forget to do it.
Of course.
No, and you're going to say, oh, the app might have worked, but I just didn't spend the time. But really, there's nothing wrong with putting on a pair of glasses, of course, to improve your near and far. And then, as you know, there's some alternative ways that we can get you doing better here. One of them, as we get older, of course, there's this monovision concept. You can make one eye a bit near, let the other eye carry your distance for you. That gives you the magnification of one of your eyes to let your brain
that's what
be
I did.
Near and far.
That's,
and that's what
I
you're
did.
Doing.
Yes, and it's it's worked.
The alternate methods are, obviously glasses, and trifocals. The reason trifocals are handy is because you're not just wanting what's 12 or 14 inches in front of your face. You also want that bit that's the computer,
mm-hmm.
so that you're on that computer looking at
headlines and so on, and that may not be right up on your face. So that's that mid-range vision. And you'll lose that at some point, too. So,
oh boy.
So you don't really have any near mid-range or far. You know, then you're usually of a certain age. I'm guessing you are. And of course, if you were far-sighted to begin with, that certain age becomes earlier. So he hit that age when he was in his 30s or even early 40s, whereas average people might be in that soup when they're about 50 or older.
Gotcha.
But the reason you're there is because of cataract. It really is. It's you've got a lens that is dysfunctional. The lens is no longer able to function the way we wished it could. And boy, do we wish we could fix this problem. It's one of the leading causes of suffering from sight loss on the planet. If we could reverse cataracts, there are, you know, there's some hope here. There's been, several thoughts about different drops that could be used or vitamin supplements and so on. And it really, you can't absolutely stop this problem.
It doesn't work.
Certain things can maybe exacerbate it. Certainly, you know, staying healthy, exercise, having a good diet, you're not smoking, all these things definitely can forestall this. You know, living in high altitude, being active outdoors certainly doesn't, you know, speed it up. So,
but it's bound to happen.
I'm not going to tell you not to do that.
It's bound to happen, though.
How much does hereditary traits factor into it? Because my mother's side of the family had a lot of cataracts.
Yeah, unquestionably. You can definitely have a gene for relatively early cataract. And then there's some interesting kinds of cataracts. So some cataracts are, for instance, brought on by medication, as an example. So if you have to use anti-inflammatory medications like prednisone, you're going to have a cataract a lot younger in life, you know. And you know, diabetes and some of these conditions can lead to earlier cataracts. But I think the major point you made is that, look, this is just the absolute privilege of living into your 40s and 50s and 60s, yeah? I mean, it's a wonderful thing that you get to live at these ages.
We used to just
wait and say, well, too bad, Grandpa, you know, Grandma, you can't see.
Yep.
Just put on these glasses. And now we're a little more, you know, that's not the generation we live in. We want to stay fully active and have all of our visual capabilities. And so we've come to really call this condition a dysfunctional lens syndrome. It really is. The lens is no longer able to function as it once could. And it also has opacity, which does bring down the contrast sensitivity. So that's the very thing that this exercise is presumably going to try to correct or improve.
So, Doc,
to
recap the app, I mean, we love having apps for everything. I can turn my thermostat up and down, but the glasses off app, if you want to improve your eyesight, it's not going to work if you want to get rid of the reading glasses.
No,
bottom
it can't
line.
Work. Optics are optics.
Okay.
Now your brain can be exercised a little bit with this, and I'm not.
My brain needs help.
You can't get. Yeah, you need help a little bit there.
It does need help.
I was part of a clinical trial where we had a device we inserted into the white of the eye to improve the near vision, and it kind of allowed the muscle to stretch a bit more.
Yep.
To give you just a little bit more power, and. As part of that study, we had patients read the New York Times on an iPod Touch that we'd give them. And if they would spend 15 minutes a day reading the New York Times, they would actually have a couple lines of improved near vision. So I will tell you, there is some benefit to really exercising your eyes this way. But in the end, you can't overcome these basic optical principles. You're stuck with them.
It's called old age. Yes, unless you get guys like you.
Let us try to fix it for you. Now, we have implants that can give you near, mid-range, and far vision.
Yeah.
So you can have cataract surgery at a little younger age, and you'll have that vision the rest of your life. You won't see any decline, and your vision will remain stable as long as you live.
So
that's really the thing we have to offer today. Outside of that, we don't have a way to soften the lens or make it better for you. So you're stuck.
This is exactly what happened. Doc, thank you for coming on. I got to hit commercials right now, but I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you putting me on, Pete. Thanks so much, and good luck to y'all.
All right, take care. That is Dr. Richard Foulkes. You can go to his website, glassesfree.com. Folks.com. It's 720 WGN. Thanks again to Dr. Richard Folks, ophthalmologist. Glassesfree.com is his website. This guy is so damn smart. I mean, sometimes he talks and I'm like, what are you talking about? He is so intelligent. He's one of those guys that he develops these surgeries and he develops these lenses that you put in your eyes. That's his job. That's what he does.
Can a regular Joe like me go see him for a checkup?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think I got a new eye doctor then.
He's got two locations. He's in Lombard, and like I said, I met him at the John Hancock Center when I was working there, and I ran to the bathroom in the hallway.
Did you trip over him or something?
No, we started talking because his office was right across from the bathroom. I go, you're the eye doctor.
Oh.
How come they don't make a surgery for reading glasses?
Yeah.
Of course, I'm spouting off, and he's like, let me explain it to you. I'm like, I'm in a commercial break here. I got to run back, but how about we meet after the show?
Nice.
And that's how it went down. I mean, that's so Chicago, though. You meet somebody in the bathroom, and you become friends with them.
Sure.
But
our eye doctor, our regular one that we had seen for several decades, finally retired. I mean, he worked into his 80s.
Oh, wow.
And finally retired.
Yeah.
And we've been to like three different ones ever since. And it's like, you don't feel comfortable with this one.
Yep.
You
yep.
can't get in to see that one. Mm-hmm. You got to come back three times to do nothing with another one.
Yep.
I think we need a new doctor.
We've always said, if you don't feel comfortable with your doctor, mm-hmm. find another one.
Yeah.
I mean, be it your general practitioner, your dentist, anything.
Yeah.
There's definitely. A million out there, and ask your friends first, and then you can go online and check things out.
Well, see, that's why I come in and do news with you on Sunday, so I can find these
because
things.
I have the doctors. I have so many doctors.
Doctors.
We have another doctor on the line, too. Are you a hoarder?
Sometimes.
I love when people say that. Well, not really.
I used to be worse
that
than I am now.
That means you are.
Yeah.
Why? What happened?
Well, I got sick from cancer and I recovered.
Yep.
I had been saving everything.
Yep.
I mean, we had more storage rooms than you could shake a fist at.
Mm-hmm.
And what else happened was I stopped teaching after I got sick. So I ended my 20-year career of teaching. So now I've got 20 years worth of materials.
Okay.
Tapes, papers, notebooks, this and that. Plus, the kids were grown and out of the house.
Yep, get rid of it.
So,
toss it.
I went in and I tossed and I tossed and I tossed, and we went down to half of one storage room. Then I started hitting the shelves and the closets in the regular rooms.
Oh, nice.
And
you're
it's
on a roll.
All clear.
I like that.
So now I walk by my wife every so often. I say, how's that closet doing?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, I'm getting to it.
I can't wait to talk to our next guest because people that save things, and I'm one of those people, don't get me wrong, we attach a memory to it, and we don't want to get rid of it. Why is that?
I don't know. My wife saves store receipts
well,
with nothing to return.
Let's bring in, that is a great question for our next guest. He is the director of the Center for Anxiety and Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. It's Dr. Patrick McGrath. Thank you for coming on. Are we hitting the nail on the head that we attach a memory to something and we have to save it?
Absolutely, because then the thought is if we lose it, then we'll lose the memory of it as well. So we figure as long as we have it, we'll always have the memory.
I think it's in my blood because my mother loved to save things. I had an aunt that was a hoarder, and my wife is the complete opposite. And as I'm getting older, it's like, why am I holding on to these things? They just don't mean anything. And Roger mentioned it when he got cancer. It's like, wait a second. I got to live my life. I need to just get rid of this stuff. Do people hit a certain point and they say, or you, when they get sick in life and they say, you know what? It's time to live life. I don't need this stuff anymore. What happens?
Yeah, there's definitely some people who get to that point if they've decided to downsize. They look around their house and go, no one else is probably going to want any of this stuff. And mm-hmm. instead of it all maybe going to a landfill, I would rather figure out a way to parse it out to people who would either really want it or people who could benefit from it. And that way, I've had some control over that thing.
Well, we wanted to have you on because a lot of people want to purge first of the year. They want to start fresh. They want to get rid of the old stuff and some of the things they can't get rid of. I still have a box, and I'm not kidding, Doc, in my garage from high school, and I can see it in my head, but I haven't looked at it probably in about 20 years. So why am I holding on to this box from high school?
Well, when you think about that in your head and you think about what's in there, what kind of feelings do you get?
Happy feelings, because I saved all the newspaper clippings because we went 5-0 in football. I'm like, oh, my God, this is great. And then we lost four straight. So,
Yeah. But, you know, that activates a part of our brain where we just feel so good. And what do many humans do? They do things that will create some kind of pleasure. So even if you don't look at that box, just knowing that it's there, that you could go look at it, and the feeling that you get from it is enough. It's kind of like a drug, right?
It gives us comfort, doesn't it? It's interesting because, like I said, my wife is the complete opposite. And she told me, go clean out the garage and you can throw away a ton of those boxes. And I said, Sarah, we could have baby pictures of Charlie in there. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. And she said, we have three in the house. I go, what about the others? And she's like, they're in my memory. You can throw them away. So I thought to myself, okay, so we can think about this. Why do we need the actual picture if we can remember the time?
Well, we also know that there might be a point in our lives where we don't remember everything. And wouldn't it be great to always have something that then could remind us when we don't have the memory that we want to have?
Right. Okay. So what would you say to people like Roger? I know you want to get in here because you're a part-time hoarder. what would you say to people right now that are trying to purge, but they just can't find themselves to throw something away?
I would say find the best of whatever the thing is of that memory. You know, let's go to your box in your garage. Let's say there's 10 newspaper clippings.
Okay.
Pick the best newspaper clipping. Keep that one. Do you really need all the other ones that are probably telling the exact same story, just in a little different way? Right. So now you've just got rid of 9 newspaper articles because you saved the one that you want. And similar with pictures and everything, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a culture now of just saving things. Think about how many times you've been to a restaurant and taken a picture of the food that you're about to eat.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Right. You know, I heard a comedian once say, if I talk to my grandmother, she shows me pictures of my great-grandfather and a stagecoach. And if I ever talk to my grandchildren, it'll be, look what I ate at Red Lobster on that day. You know?
That is so true.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that you need to do if you decide, Pete, to actually physically walk into that garage and open the top of that box, and you start looking at all the things that are in there. And I had to do that.
Aww.
And I think you've mentioned a couple of things that I think you can do. And I think one of the things that Pete mentioned is great, or I believe you mentioned it too, is find other people who might enjoy these things as much as you did. For example, I collected, erroneously thinking that I could make tons of money off of this, I collected comics when our kids were young, thinking they'd be worth $1 billion now that they're older and there's their college. And I realized, no, they're worth less now than what I paid for them. So I have not read these since I got them. I don't feel like reading them anymore. Who would appreciate these more?
Donate them.
Exactly.
Donate
them. That's what I did with every single box, and I think I had about 40 boxes of comics.
Donate them.
I donated them to, first of all, I checked all the people I've met from WGN who are collectors, gave those away. Then I went to comic stores, I gave those away.
Let me ask the doctor this. Hold that thought for a second. Doctor, does that make hoarders feel better when they're able to give it to someone else?
Not at first, no, because it's still so attached to that idea that they're going to lose that memory or that they really deserve to have this. Maybe they paid money for it, so it's theirs and it shouldn't be anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And you really have to kind of work and massage that experience with someone as you're going through this. Hopefully, at the end of it, they're excited to be able to see that they can use their house again and that they have access to areas of their home that they hadn't even seen in 20 years. So it's a process to get to that point. But it can get there. It just does take some time.
That was my next question for Roger. Did you feel better once you donated these things, and how did you feel at your house?
I felt way better when I was donating because I saw the joy in the eyes of the people that I was donating it to, giving them to, and that made me feel good. When I got back to the house and I saw that it was empty, I was fine because that was my original goal, was to declutter my life. And I'd already made that hard decision. That's one of the hardest decisions, I think, Doctor, that a person who is faced with this has to decide before they do anything.
Sure. And let's remember that this is a mental health issue, and that other reasons for hoarding are you're literally building a wall around yourself, and all of that stuff protects you. You don't have people over to your home when you're a hoarder because it would be embarrassing. But on the other hand, it also keeps people out of your home, and that becomes your safe place. So to lose all that stuff is losing literally the wall you've built around to protect yourself.
We're talking to Dr. Patrick McGrath, the director of the Center for Anxiety and Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. When I was in college, I put in water meters in Oak Park, in Elgin, and many of the suburbs. I did it as a summer job, and I would walk into people's houses. I mean, you know, us saying that we're hoarders and we have boxes in our basement is one thing, but there's people's houses that I walked into where they had a maze from the front door. They had piles and piles. I'm talking 6, 7, 8 feet high of boxes and newspapers in their house, their entire room filled, and just a little area where you could get through. I mean, it's crazy. The hoarders out there.
Well, and it's a real safety issue for people, too. And that's where we look at the diagnosis of hoarding, is because there are people who have been killed by their hoard because something shifts in the home. All this stuff falls on top of them. If you want to see a fascinating case, one of the first ones known in the U.S. was the Collier brothers in New York. And one brother who was very paranoid was taking care of the other brother who couldn't walk and just kind of lived in one room in the home. That brother built mazes and booby traps. And one day he was coming into the house to take care of his brother, set off one of his booby traps. All the stuff collapsed on him. He died. And then the brother who was stuck in the home eventually died of starvation as well, too.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a month later that someone in the neighborhood said, you know, we haven't seen them for a while. And that's when police went in. And the fascinating piece is that they started to take stuff from the basement and they realized the house was collapsing. So they had to go to the third floor and start taking stuff out of the top of the house and work their way down because all the stuff in the basement was holding the house up.
Right. And to get back to my high school box, if I ever find it, I don't need it anymore. I feel like I can just throw it away. I don't want to look at it because then I'll sit down and I'll start thinking about it and I want to save a few items. It's like, no, I don't need to save them. I haven't looked at it in 20 years. Why not just toss it?
Yeah, and if you're okay with it, that's great. And I would say that's where most people finally get to. But again, let's recognize what we're talking about for us in general versus someone who's a hoarder, what we might consider an emotional connection to something is so insignificant compared to what they have that attachment to. I mean, to them, even the idea that I could just know something, and they don't care about the internet. They like the tangible experience of it.
Right.
You know, if I ever said to them, I wonder what a Whopper cost in 1972, they could say, I'll find that out in 6 weeks because I know where there's a Burger King receipt from 1972, but I got to work my way over there. You know?
Oh, boy.
And they love the idea of knowing that I would be able to tell you what that is and how great that feels.
Rod, you just mentioned that your wife saves receipts.
Yeah, she saves store receipts. I don't know why. Once in a while, it's because she wants to return something, but we just had a discussion last night about this potato peeler that's still on its cardboard. We have no idea where the receipt is. And that was about 5 years ago. She said she was going to return it. Seriously. And it came up because she says, I need a new peeler.
Mm-hmm.
I keep throwing them out. There's no reason to, in my mind, there's no reason to save store receipts, even with the new electronic age where, you know, your last four numbers are all over everything. But you throw them out. She has drawers in the kitchen filled with receipts, and I just take them. I don't tell her anymore. I just take them and throw them out because I know she's not returning anything.
Right.
We already ate all that food that she had a receipt for. Is that a minor case?
Yeah, that's a minor case. I mean, if it's really not going past a couple of drawers, it's not interfering in the usage of your home or something. But if all those receipts start taking over the kitchen and you two start massively arguing about the fact that you went and threw one of them out and now she's trying to find it, that's when we're starting to see that this is starting to become a problem.
That's not good. Mm-hmm. Can I get to some of these text messages on the phone with us, Dr. Patrick McGrath, the director of the Center for Anxiety and Obsessive Compulsive Disorder. We're talking about purging your house. We're talking about hoarding. 219 area code. Family heirlooms are the hardest to eliminate. And this, they sent me a picture of it. You can't see it, but, you know, it's a rocking chair. It's an old desk. I mean, how do people get rid of items like this when they don't have room for it?
Yeah, you know, I think it goes back to, if there is someone who would get joy from it, would you be willing then to hand it off to them? You know, even garage sales, I've seen some people who just kind of watch the crowd, and if there's a family that walks up to that rocking chair and just gets this look on their face, then that person can go up to them and say, I'd like to make you a deal on the rocking chair. I love how you looked at the rocking chair. It would make me happy to know that this would go to someone who gets that good feeling about it like I do when I look at the rocking chair.
Wow, that's a great idea. 847 area code. My husband passed 15 years ago. I can't find the strength to get rid of his clothes. I figure that happens a lot, I would say.
Yes, I remember when my grandfather died, we joked that there was going to be a lot of just awful-looking homeless people wearing the idea, because they were going to wear all of his plaid pants or
checkered
something like
pants.
That. You know?
Yes. Why did all our grandfathers have checkered pants?
Yeah, but we also got a kick out of the fact, too, that there might be now in Chicago a lot of people who finally had some new clothes. And, and even if they were checkered pants, that now if I'm downtown and I see someone who, like, because we donated to a homeless shelter downtown, I now know that when I see a checkered pant on somebody who if I see some of this homeless, I kind of think of my grandpa, and it gives me a smile.
Right, so, of course. 815 area code. One trick I use when was taking photos of things that I've donated, because I can always look at them again. That's a great idea.
Photos are good for that, as well as maybe for the receipts as well. Maybe just take a photo of those receipts and something.
I could do that. Hold on.
There you go, Raj.
I have a separate file with Whole Foods receipts. But another thing, that brings up another thing that I think Pete was talking about with the school stuff. I have several Facebook pages or whatever that are associated with our alma mater, our high school and our college alma maters.
Okay.
And so people have been putting photos of things that they kept that I never did, and I also put things up that they never had. That's now our resource. I don't know how long into the millennium it's going to stay on the internet, but that's now our resource for all those memories. And it keeps coming up. In fact, I put all the pages of our senior graduating class yearbook up there. We are now using that to make the ID badges for our 50th reunion. We've sent those links to the company.
Okay. All right. I like that. I'm sure that happens a lot, Doc, right?
Oh, absolutely. There was a place that we went up to when I was a kid in South Haven called Sunnybrook Farm. And I got there the day before it was demolished, and I took a couple of signs, and I've put them up on a Facebook page now that they have for it, and everyone from across the country ever stayed there responds, and it's just generated great conversations. Now, these signs are small, they're not taking up huge space in my house, but the joy that people have had from it has been wonderful. So that's the beauty of social media, to be able to share those types of things now, for sure.
We're talking with Dr. Patrick McGrath, the director of the Center for Anxiety and Obsessive Compulsive Disorders. I wanted to talk to you. We had a conversation this week on the morning show about pictures. No one frames pictures anymore. And for Christmas this year, I framed pictures. My brothers and I, we all took a picture, and I framed it and gave them a picture, an actual picture. And then I started thinking, okay, everybody look at your phone. And we went around the morning show, and everybody said how many pictures they had on their phone.
Thousands.
And I hate to say this, but I looked at my phone, and I have 25,000 pictures on my phone. And I'm like, oh, my God. I need to just purge my phone. What is it with digital hoarding nowadays where we take these pictures and they just sit, and we get nervous if we want to delete them or move them?
Yeah, because it's like machine gun photography, right? We could just take a picture, and then now that idea that I'll never have to forget anything because I've taken a picture of it. Think about when we were younger. It had to be lights going on, and we had to have the actual camera. How easy it is now just to take a picture of something. So we've really moved into a new phase that we're just starting to study now in psychology about
Yeah.
What is it to be able to say, not only do I have a memory of something, I have a picture of almost everything I've ever done. Right?
Every single thing, especially every, our kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And videos. Oh, look who got engaged. Oh, my gosh. Someone was recording this, and now we have it on video. Doc, I'm pressed up against the top of the hour because we have the Blackhawks pregame. I want to get to some more text messages, but I want to take some phone calls, too. We have Beth on line one. Beth, you're on with Dr. Patrick McGrath. What's your question about hoarding?
Hi. Thank you so much. It's just so very appropriate that I tuned in tonight. I am dealing with helping my mother close a 55-year-old family business, and we owned the building, so we have so much stuff in the building. And it's been a very frustrating process for all of us. And I've tried to be very patient with this. She really does not want to let anything go. And when I pack things up to put them in storage or to sell them or donate or throw out, God forbid, it's been frustrating for us. So I guess I'm just wondering if you have any advice for someone like myself who thinks if it has value, if it has a use, then we're going to keep it or we'll sell it, versus, you know, she's fighting that tremendously with the idea that everything has meaning and has value.
Right, of course. So the question is, where do they start, Doc?
Yeah, well, one thing is, if everything has meaning and value, but we're not going to have this building anymore, then we have to weigh the cost of what all the storage is going to be for all of these things, too. I have had some families who have hired an auctioneer, and what they've done is they've come in and they've kind of appraised all the things in the area, and then the family can sit at the auction and see, look at all these people fighting over these things who really want it, and that has given them the sense of, now I know these things are going to go somewhere, that people have fought to have this. They really, really want this. And that has been very settling to them to know that it's not going to just get thrown out, but people have really invested their time and money to get this thing.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point, too. I've tried to stress the idea that sometimes these things are now going to have a second life or a third life.
Right.
And someone else is going to find that enjoyment.
Yep.
Beth, I mean,
it's challenging.
It is. And when you have a business and you're selling things, you don't mind selling it because you're making money on it. So you love to see it let go. But now that the business is closing, all those things that are left in the business take on a very different meaning for you, because these are the last remains of our business. This is the last remains of 65 years of my life. So suddenly all those things you were going to sell to other people now are your things.
Yep. Thank you, Beth. Let's go to Tom in Chicago. Tom, you're on with Dr. Patrick McGrath. We're talking about purging, hoarding. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, a friend whose mother, buys things online, or not online, but on TV, the TV sales.
Oh, boy.
And there's not actually, I can't imagine there's a lot of memory attachment to this, because it just keeps pouring in. And what do you do about something like that, where people just keep buying things and don't have room for it, to the point where, like, they're all the empty rooms are now chock full with various types of things that they're selling, you know, Vegematics and whatnot?
Sure. So when we look at hoarding, we take a look at the fact that the diagnosis goes on. I have all this stuff and it's getting in the way of my life, but we also have to take a look at, there's a subset of hoarding, which is the acquisition part of hoarding.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who just keep going out and acquiring, and it's the hunt. And it's similar to, like, kleptomania. You know, if somebody is a kleptomania issue where they steal things, it's not about the thing. It's about the hunt of finding the thing and getting it. After they get it, they might throw it out. And it could be very similar, something for hoarding. And once they get the thing, they don't really care as much about it. It was just the fact that they got it and how exciting it was to get it. So part of that is just trying to get people away from watching some of those shows and work on what are other areas in your life that you can find joy and happiness from that don't just involve acquiring things, but actually doing things with the stuff that you already have. And you can work with a therapist on that who can help with some of those things.
I was just going to say, that's therapy. Tom, thanks for your call. 312-981-7200. We're getting so many text messages, I can't even keep up. 847 area code. The person whose stuff it is has to be motivated or it will never work. I've been through this with my mother and myself, which is true.
Yes, Absolutely. And you have to deal with the feelings. So, see, you talked about your all the photos you have.
Yep.
Imagine deleting a photo of your child right now. I mean, there's a part of you that feels like, oh, my gosh, what disservice did I just do to my child? I deleted a picture of them. Right? So look how hard deleting one picture is of your kid.
Yeah.
You've got 20,000 pictures of your kids or something like that. So it's a long haul to get people to do this and to be motivated to stay in the game.
We got about 30 seconds left because I got the Blackhawks coming up. But everybody is asking, we have so many text messages, I'm a hoarder, where do I start? Give them the first step. What do they do?
Well, I'm the president of OCD Midwest, and we have a hoarding task force through OCD Midwest as well. If you go on our OCD Midwest website, and you can see about our hoarding task force, and we'll make sure to get some updated info on there. Dr. Rodney Benson in the area and Dr. Greg Chaffa are both doing some work in this area as well. So we can definitely work with people to help them with their hoarding.
What is your website?
If you go to OCDMidwest.com, and I'm also at Amita Health, that's where the Center for Anxiety and OCD is located, so you can find us at Amita, too, and you can contact me there, and I'd be happy to get people to where they need to go.
Dr. Patrick McGrath, Doc, you were great. We got to have you back on, man. I can't keep up with the text messages and phone calls.
Hey, anytime. You let me know. I'd be happy to be back.
You're the best. Coming up, we have Blackhawks hockey. It's 720 WGN.